Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo and John Russell, in addition to the American History series, Making of a Nation. But first, this report. United States government lawyers have called it the biggest college admissions scam ever prosecuted by the U.S. Justice Department. On March 12th, U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling announced that 50 people across the country had been charged in a $25 million plot to reportedly buy admission into top American colleges. Lelling said the plot was set up to guarantee admissions to top colleges for students, in his words, not on their merits, but through fraud. The colleges included top schools like Yale, Stanford, and Georgetown University. Others were Wake Forest, the University of Texas at Austin, the University of California at Los Angeles, and many more. Lelling said the colleges themselves were not directly involved in the plot, however. The plot included cheating on college entrance exams, creating false athletic and school successes, and hiding payment as charitable donations to avoid paying taxes.
The U.S. attorney named William Rick Singer as the organizer of the plot. Singer reportedly did so using his business, Edge College and Career Network, and an organization called the Key Worldwide Foundation, or KWF. Singer agreed to cooperate with the investigation in September 2018. He admitted guilt to the charges on the day of Lelling's announcement. The charging documents say Singer advised parents to seek more time on tests for their children by claiming they had learning disabilities. Singer also paid test administrators to permit another person to help the students with answers or take the test for them. The parents charged in the plot reportedly paid Singer between $15,000 and $75,000 for such services. Their payments were listed as donations to KWF. American actor Felicity Huffman was among the parents charged. Her daughter received extra time to take the SAT. Her test score increased by 400 points from her first time taking it because a test administrator working with Singer changed Huffman's daughter's answers for her. Gordon Ernst, the head coach for tennis at Georgetown University, also was charged. Between 2012 and 2018, the U.S. attorney said Ernst received $2.7 million to name 12 students as recruits for the tennis team. The money sent from KWF was called a consulting fee.
In January 2018, Singer reportedly paid the head coach of Yale's women's soccer team $400,000 to accept a student who did not even play the sport competitively. That coach is Rudolph Meredith. The student's family reportedly then paid Singer $1.2 million for the service. American actor Lori Loughlin and her husband, clothing designer Mossimo Gianulli, paid $500,000 to have their two daughters admitted to the University of Southern California, or USC, as recruits for the crew team. Yet neither of the two girls were even rowers. Gordon Kaplan, co-chairman of the well-known international law firm Wilkie Farr and Gallagher, reportedly paid Singer $75,000 to help raise his daughter's test scores. In a phone call, Singer told Kaplan, "What we do is we help the wealthiest families in the U.S. get their kids into school. There is a front door, which means you get in on your own. The back door is through institutional advancement, which is 10 times as much money. And I've created this side door in." Nick Smith is a professor at the University of New Hampshire. He told the Associated Press, "I don't think anyone is shocked that children of the wealthy have an easier time getting into top schools." But Smith added, "What is new here is that all of those considerable advantages apparently aren't enough for some, and they will go to any length to directly buy their way in." Several students have filed a lawsuit against Yale, Georgetown, Stanford, and other schools involved in the case. They said they and others had been denied a fair chance at admission.
The lawsuit filed Thursday said each of the universities took the students' admission application fees while failing to take adequate steps to ensure that their admissions process was fair and free of fraud, bribery, cheating, and dishonesty. Colleges quickly moved to dismiss or suspend any coaches and test administrators named in the charging documents. Georgetown officials said Ernst left in December 2017 after the college found that he had violated admissions rules. The school said it was now looking at the tennis team to review its recruits. USC officials said the college is looking at current students and graduates that may be connected to the scheme alleged by the government. And Yale said the university was the victim of a crime. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. This program explores the history and usage of common expressions in American English. Today, we talk about a time when half the world is waking from the dark, cold winter months. Spring. We often describe spring as a time of rebirth, renewal, and awakening. Many trees are blossoming, and early flowers are pushing through the earth. Things are coming to life. When the weather turns warm, many people suffer from spring fever. Common symptoms of spring fever include not being able to focus on school or work, taking long walks, or falling in love. So, are you actually sick when you have spring fever? Originally, yes. Spring fever used to refer to an actual illness. When the weather turned warm, some people developed sore throats, headaches, or stuffy noses. The definition of spring fever slowly changed in the early 1800s. People came to use the term to mean a sudden increase of romantic feelings. Elvis Presley describes this feeling in his song, spring fever.
Comes to everyone. Spring fever. It's time for fun.
There is no doubt now. Love is in the air.
Get up, get up. Spring is everywhere.
These days, we use spring fever to describe a restless feeling after the long, cold days of winter. But the word spring is not just a season. It is also a verb that means something happened or appeared quickly. When you put spring and life together, you get spring to life. This expression means something suddenly becomes very active, or perhaps seems more alive. You may spring to life after hearing that a distant friend will be visiting you. Or maybe your favorite soccer team finally sprang to life in the second half, played well, and won the match. But this is just the beginning. There are so many more spring expressions that mean to happen suddenly. As you can see, American English has so many phrases that use spring to mean something happens quickly. The ones we have heard are just the ones that sprang to mind. In other words, they were the first ones I thought of, without spending much time thinking about it. But perhaps those examples are confusing. Maybe I should have prepared you, instead of just springing them on you. And I did it again. If you spring something on other people, you have surprised them, usually not in a good way. We end this Words and Their Stories back on the season spring. Here is a short poem by Oliver Herford, titled, I Heard a Bird Sing. It tells how a simple bird song brings a longing for spring during the month of December. I heard a bird sing in the dark of December, a magical thing and sweet to remember. We are nearer to spring than we were in September. I heard a bird sing in the dark of December. I'm Ana Mateo.
NASA's large new rocket will not be ready for launch next year, the American Space Agency's top official said this week. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine told a Senate committee that he is thinking about using rockets made by private companies to keep the planned June 2020 launch date. NASA's delayed rocket is called the Space Launch System, or SLS. It's a critical piece of what NASA needs to build, Bridenstine told the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. Bridenstine added that NASA would need two private rockets to take over the SLS job of launching the Orion capsule and an upper stage. Orion must dock with the upper stage in orbit around Earth before going to the moon. This is 2019, Senator Roger Wicker, the committee chairman, told Bridenstine. I'd sure like to keep us on schedule. The first test flight had been planned for this year. I want to be clear. NASA has a history of not meeting launch dates, and I'm trying to change that, Bridenstine said. NASA seeks a sustainable moon program. In the past, Apollo lunar landings were direct trips from and back to Earth. The goal now is to have a base with astronauts near the moon. Orion would not carry a crew and would not land on the moon. Instead, the Orion would get close to the moon before traveling beyond it. A NASA statement says Orion will travel 280,000 miles, or 450,000 kilometers, from Earth, thousands of miles beyond the moon, over the course of about a 3-week mission. The statement adds, Orion will stay in space longer than any ship for astronauts has done without docking to a space station and return home faster and hotter than ever before. NASA is already using private companies to make International Space Station shipments. If private rockets were to be used for the 2020 mission, SLS would be put in operation for NASA's second exploration mission by 2023. I'm John Russell.
And now we present The Making of a Nation. The American nation began to expand west during the middle 1800s. People settled in the great open areas of the Dakotas, Utah, Wyoming, and California. The movement forced the nation to deal with great tribes of Native American Indians. The Indians had lived in the Western territories for hundreds of years. Settlers and cattle ranchers pushed the Indians out of their homelands. The result was a series of wars between the tribes and the federal government.
At first, the United States government had just one policy to deal with the Indians. It was brutal. Whenever settlers wanted Indian land, the tribes were pushed farther west. If the Indians protested or tried to defend their land, they were destroyed with crushing force. By the middle 1800s, almost all the eastern Indians had been moved west of the Mississippi River. They were given land in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. The government described these Indians as civilized. This meant they were too weak to cause more trouble. Many agreed to follow the ways of the United States government.
The Indians of the Western grasslands were different. They refused to give up their way of life. These Plains Indians were always on the move because they hunted buffalo, the American bison. They followed great groups of the animals across the grassy plains. At that time, there were millions of these animals in the American West. The Indians of the plains depended on the buffalo for almost everything they needed. Many of them were fierce fighters. The Plains Indians did not want settlers crossing their hunting lands. They often tried to destroy the wagon trains carrying settlers to California and Oregon.
The United States Army was given the job of keeping peace. Soldiers were sent to build roads and forts in the Western Plains. They tried to protect the wagon trains from Indian attacks. They tried to keep settlers from invading Indian lands. There were many fights between the soldiers and the Plains Indians. The soldiers had more powerful weapons. They usually won.
Some Plains Indians tried to live peacefully with the settlers. One such group was part of the Sioux tribe, called Santee Sioux. It was the largest and most powerful group in the West. The Santee Sioux lived along the northeastern edge of the Great Plains in what is now the state of Minnesota. They signed treaties with the government, giving up 90% of their land. The Santee agreed to live in a small area. In exchange, the United States agreed to make yearly payments to the tribe. This made it possible for the Indians to buy food and other things from traders.
Trouble started, however, in the summer of 1862. The government was late giving the Indians their yearly payment. As a result, the Indians lacked the money to buy food. Traders refused to give the Indians credit to buy food. One trader said, "If they are hungry, let them eat grass." The Indians were hungry. Soon, their hunger turned to anger. Finally, the local Indian chief called his men together. He gave the orders for war. Early the next morning, the tribe attacked the trading stores. Many of the traders were killed, including the man who had insulted the Indians. He was found with his mouth filled with grass. The governor of Minnesota sent a force of state soldiers to stop the Indian revolt. The soldiers had artillery. They killed several hundred Indians in battle. They hanged several others. Soon, the revolt was over.
Trouble came next to parts of Colorado and Wyoming. This is where the Sioux Indians and the Cheyenne Indians lived. The chief of the Lakota Sioux tribe was named Red Cloud. The Indians fought bitterly to keep settlers out of their hunting grounds. After 2 years of fighting, with many deaths on both sides, the government decided the struggle was too costly. It asked for peace. The Sioux and the Cheyenne agreed. They were given a large area of land north of Wyoming in the Dakota Territory. They also were given the right to use their old hunting lands farther north. The government agreed to close a road used by settlers to cross the hunting grounds, and all soldiers were withdrawn from Sioux country.
The war ended, and peace came to the Sioux and the Cheyenne. With peace came a new United States policy towards Indians of the West. The government decided to put aside an area of land for each tribe. The land was called a reservation. Each tribe would live on its own reservation. Most of the reservations were in Indian territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. Other reservations were in Dakota, near the land of the Sioux.
The government believed it would cost less money and fewer lives to keep Indians on reservations. The Indians would be away from possible trouble with settlers. Instead of moving freely over the plains to hunt buffalo, the Indians would live in one place. They would receive food and money from the government. Officials came from Washington to explain this new policy to the Indians. A big meeting was held. Chiefs representing many tribes attended. The chiefs spoke, one after another, to the government officials.
All of the chiefs said they, too, wished to live in peace with the United States government. But many questioned the decision to move to reservations. One who did so was Chief Ten Bears of the Comanche tribe. He said, "There are things which you have said to me that I do not like. You said you wanted to put us on a reservation. You said you would build houses for us. I do not want your houses. I was born on the plains where the wind blows free and there is nothing to break the light of the sun. I was born where everything breathed a free breath. I want to die there, not within walls."
So the government and the Indians reached a compromise. The tribes were given reservations in Indian territory, but they were also given permission to hunt buffalo in a wide area south of the reservations. The Indians agreed to give up all their old lands. They agreed to live in peace on the reservations. In exchange, the United States promised to give the Indians all the food, clothing, and other things they needed. It also promised to give them schools and medical care.
The Indians were not happy with this agreement. They did not want to give up their old ways of living. However, they saw they had no choice. The government was too strong. They waited weeks, then months, for help to move to the new reservations. They could not understand the delay in carrying out the agreement. The delay was in Washington, D.C. Congress could not agree on how much money to spend on the Indians. So the lawmakers refused to approve the agreement. They left the situation unsettled. Again, Indians were forced to watch angrily as settlers began moving on to lands they had agreed to give up. As the settlers moved in, the buffalo and other animals left. The Indians had difficulty finding food.
Soldiers shared their food with the Indians. It was not enough. Western officials sent urgent messages to Washington asking for supplies for the Indians. No supplies could be sent until Congress approved the money to buy them. As before, some of the Indians became angry and refused to wait any longer. Their anger led to new fighting. In the end, it was a fight that failed to win back their land.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.